I had a bunch of things on my to-do list yesterday. Chores that needed to be done, phone calls that needed to be made, plans that needed to be finalized. I ended up taking a long bike ride. I stopped at an art fair, a music festival, and a beach in Madison. It was really a great day. But those things on my to-do list? They're still there. How do we motivate ourselves to get the tasks done that maybe we aren't all that thrilled about doing? We'll find out this hour. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, July 14th. I know I'm not the only one who sometimes has a hard time getting motivated. Why do you think you procrastinate? And have you found a way to get your to-do list accomplished without waiting until the absolute last minute? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Eric Barker. He's the author of the blog Barking Up the Wrong Tree, where he wrote the article How to Motivate Yourself, 3 Steps Backed by Science. Good morning.
Hi.
So what took you so long?
Maybe I wasn't motivated enough.
Right. So I'm not alone, am I, in that I had an absolutely wonderful day yesterday, but I didn't do anything on my to-do list?
No, you're not alone at all. Actually, much of the research shows that out of a 5-day work week, most people are only productive about 3 of those 5 days.
Why is that?
I mean, I think one of the fundamental things that most kind of productivity systems lack when you look at the research is that we use a machine or kind of a factory metaphor so we try and systematize everything and focus on willpower. And the truth is that, you know, people are very emotional and we don't kind of take emotions into consideration. And when we do think about that and we get emotions on our side, then that's something that actually does get us going. When we feel good, we do better.
Yeah, I can see that. But tell us why we don't take emotions into consideration.
Well, like I said, I think there's that machine metaphor, and I think past that, we often think it's all about willpower. We all think that we're going to kind of power through it. We need to pull ourselves up by the bootstraps. And when you look at a lot of the research on, for instance, procrastination, we procrastinate the most when we're in bad moods because what people think is, well, gee, I don't really feel like it right now. If I can just do something, I'll feel a little bit better. And then when I feel a little bit better, I can do it then. Mm-hmm. And the truth is most of what we do, we actually act on habit. Research out of Duke University, which was cited in Charles Duhigg's excellent 2012 book, The Power of Habit, says that about 40%, nearly half of what we do each day, is the result of habit. We're following scripts most of the time, not using willpower. So we kind of need to keep in mind how we actually get things done. And the truth is, I don't think most of us really, really pay attention to how we get things done.
Yeah, yesterday was not a work day for me. It was, a day of rest, though I wanted to go and have some fun, too. Part of the reason why I think I procrastinated and didn't do the things on my to-do list is that they weren't particularly pleasant things. I didn't want to do an unpleasant task on a day that I wanted to, on a Sunday. So it's the task itself was I considered unpleasant.
Absolutely. But the funny thing is we do unpleasant tasks kind of on a regular basis. Sometimes we put them off. And so it's interesting. Which ones do we get done? Which ones do we not get done? And, you know, sometimes a big part of it is kind of the story we tell ourselves. You know, and Adam Grant, who is a professor at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania, has shown that that story we tell ourselves about the activities we're doing makes a big difference. So, for instance, a lot of what parents do, you know, changing poopy diapers or cleaning up after kids, those aren't very fun activities, but they're very quick to do them. Why? Because they're telling themselves that story of, I'm a parent, I'm a good parent, this is good for my child. So they're actually very quick to do very unpleasant activities. So it's not always really about the activity. Sometimes it's about how we feel about it, the emotions around it, or the story we tell ourselves.
So your three steps are, the first one is get positive. So therefore,
when we're in negative moods, you know, we're much less likely to accomplish anything. I mean, obviously, at the extreme, depressed people don't do much at all. Or like you said, when something doesn't energize you, or you just, you know, quote unquote, don't feel like it, you're much less likely to get done. Whereas I think we've all had those days where, few and far between as they may be, where we wake up, we feel energized, and we just start cooking right down that to-do list, and things are really humming. It's like feeling good is a really good step, first step towards trying to get things done.
Yeah, so how do you get positive or get optimistic about something if you're not feeling particularly positive about it?
Well, what's really interesting is along those kind of same lines of the story you're telling yourself is there's a study that was done in a hospital where you had people who had lower-level janitorial-style jobs and, you know, not particularly pleasant and, you know, potentially not particularly meaningful. But when those people were instructed in the research study to kind of define their roles differently, you know, you're not a janitor, you're somebody who is helping patients, you know, recover better. And once they saw their role as something a little bit different, they actually became more engaged in it, they did a better job, and they felt better about it. So rather than kind of looking at this one menial task that you have to do as unimportant or just not fun, you know, what's the bigger picture? What's the bigger story that this is a part of? Is it helping you build your career? Is it helping you be a better parent? You know, what is it that actually does energize and engage you in terms of a greater story?
Then step two is get rewarded. So maybe I should have said I will reward myself with this bike ride once I do this task.
Absolutely. What we've seen is, just again and again, we like to think we're so special, but the truth is, there's actually some, literature just like, hey, you give a dog does the right thing, you give a dog a treat, you know, for the most part, like video games, it's if you turn life into a game, it can be the same thing. You do what you got to do and you get to have your fun after. And at least in the short term, rewards are very, very powerful, not only in terms of just getting things done, but they're also powerful in terms of building those habits so that now on a consistent basis, you're beginning to make that emotional association of, hey, I do this and then something good happens. It makes you more inclined to do the right thing the next time.
Yeah. So what is a reward for in terms of motivation, money?
That's a really excellent question because the issue is Dan Pink has written a phenomenal book about the science behind motivation called Drive. He talks about kind of the duality there, where in the short term, rewards are very, very powerful. And on a personal basis, rewards can be great like that. The problem is, in the longer term, rewards are what is called extrinsic. It means they come from outside you versus intrinsic, which is, you know, I do this because I love it. And the problem with extrinsic rewards is in the longer term, people aren't doing a certain thing because they love it. They're doing it to get the reward. So you can get a misalignment of goals there where the company wants you to achieve this objective. What you really want is your paycheck. You know, that's a little different than you saying, I want to do this because I love it. So the most powerful type of rewards are intrinsic. I love this. I care about it. I want to get better at it. But at least in the short term and on the personal level, rewards are a great kind of part of a bigger system to get you to that next step.
Yeah. You had an interesting example on your piece. You call it a commitment device. Give your friend a $100. If you get the task done by 5 p.m., you get the $100 back. If you don't complete it, you lose the $100. That would be a motivator, I guess.
Well, I mean, that shifts it. The issue is that we frequently like to foist work off on our future selves. You know, Eric right now doesn't feel like it, but I'm sure Eric tomorrow is just going to love doing that unpleasant task. And you procrastinate, and the truth is that future you is probably not going to be any more excited about doing this than you are now. So you kind of have to shift the costs. It's a very kind of economics-based attitude. Shift the costs of procrastination into the present instead of into the future. And once it becomes, oh, geez, I'm gonna lose $100, now all of a sudden you're already behind the eight ball. You don't get to have your fun now. Right now you're facing losing $100. It becomes much more emotional. You now all of a sudden you have skin in the game, and you're much more motivated to actually do that unpleasant task.
We will talk about step three in getting motivated, get peer pressure, when we come back from our break. And we will welcome your questions for our guest. We'll welcome your own suggestions for how to get motivated. Do you have a hard time getting motivated? What steps do you take to get motivated? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Eric Barker. He is the author of the piece, How to Motivate Yourself, Three Steps Backed by Science. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 20 minutes past 6 o'clock. Our guest this hour is telling us why we are so good at thinking of what to do, but so terrible at actually doing those things. And we are trying to get motivated by examining the three steps the experts say will help us get motivated, getting positive, getting rewarded, and getting peer pressure. We've talked about the first two steps. Now we'll talk about the third, and we will welcome your questions and your own experiences. Is it tough for you to get motivated? What are some of your motivational tips? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Eric Barker, the author of the blog Barking Up the Wrong Tree, where he wrote the piece How to Motivate Yourself, Three Steps Backed by Science. So how do we get peer pressure, Eric?
What you see consistently through a lot of literature, and one great example is the Terman study, which is a longitudinal study. It followed people for their entire lives. It started, I believe, in like the 1920s straight through. And you see that peer pressure, number one, isn't just something, to think about with teenagers and kids. And number two, peer pressure, more often than being something bad, we're always worried about kids getting involved with drugs or alcohol. Peer pressure is usually good, and it affects, adults a huge amount as well. If the people that you spend time with, the people that surround you, influence you, to a much greater degree. We always like to think that we're, independent, I make my own decisions, but the truth is, we all dress pretty similar to the people around us, do some of the similar things. And as Bob Sutton, who teaches at the Stanford Graduate School of Business, has said repeatedly, when you're interviewing at a company, take a look around at the people who work there, because you're going to become more like them. They're not going to become more like you. So a really powerful way to help yourself get motivated and get the things done, especially over the longer term, is to make sure the people that you're spending time with, do they have healthy habits? Are they doing the right things? Are these the kind of people that you want to be? Because even if you don't notice it, peer pressure is going to affect you.
Well, we'll talk more about peer pressure and rewards and optimism as we go along. But let's take our first caller, Dave in Hudson. Hello, Dave.
Hello. Yeah, so my the technique that worked for me was I worked third shift, 40-hour week, and I had a project in the bathroom trying to remodel it. And it was really languishing. So what I did was I went out and got a part-time job, 20 hours a week. And then, so I don't have time to procrastinate now. But if I don't do it today on my day off, it won't get done for another 3 days. So it seemed to work for me.
Really? So just working your butt off made you work even harder.
Yeah, less time to procrastinate in order to, you know, move it forward.
Yeah, well, Eric, what does the research tell us about that? Maybe maybe we have too much free time and we just waste it. And maybe if we didn't have as much free time, we wouldn't.
Well, what's interesting is it's sort of just along the lines of a commitment device in a way, where now, you know, it's like when you're unable to look forward and say, oh, I'll do that tomorrow, it's like, well now I'm working 60 hours a week. I'm not going to have any more time tomorrow than I am today. You know, it's harder to fool yourself. It's harder to say, oh, I'll do it tomorrow. So it's a fantastic example of when you increase the costs, you know, of delay. You know, you actually get more done. One time on the blog, I interviewed Andrew Goldberg, who is a writer for the television show Family Guy, and he said that one of the best things for his writing was having kids, because it kept him so busy he couldn't procrastinate. Any free moment that he had to write, he sat down and did it. So that's an excellent example.
Thank you very much, Dave. Hope the bathroom remodeling is going well. Let's go next to Tom in Green Bay. Hello, Tom.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I want to give you an example along these lines of something that hasn't worked out for me. I have a friend from college, and after many years, he lives way across the country, and I see him about once every 2 years, and I talk to him on the phone probably twice a year. So I wanted to send him some stuff, and I kept procrastinating it. So the last time I called him on his birthday, I said, I'm going to send you this stuff. Look for it in the mail. My goal was to motivate myself to send it because I had made a commitment. Unfortunately, I still haven't sent it. And the last time I called him and left a message, he hasn't returned my call.
Oh.
That's a really tricky scenario.
Yeah, I mean, so you're saying that you thought you'd be putting, I guess, the pressure on yourself to do it. And
Yeah, that was my goal. Is okay, now I've committed to him. I got to do it. But I keep finding myself saying there's a better day. There's going to be more stuff I want to send him.
Yeah, well,
I send him Green Bay Packers memorabilia, so I still am collecting it. And why I don't just send what I've got, I've got to answer that question yet.
Yeah, well, what do you suppose is going on there, Eric?
Well, I think, you know, to take an example from the last caller, you know, it's so we're talking about commitment devices. You definitely made a commitment in terms of speaking to your friend or to saying to yourself, I was going to do this. But what didn't happen is the costs didn't actually go up. So it's like, what's going to happen? So for the example I used in the blog post, it was like saying to a third party, here's $100, I lose the $100. What's a way that you can just increase the cost of this is really going to be bad, you know, if I don't do this, instead of just saying something to yourself, some way where it actually becomes a penalty of sorts. And not only that, also involving another person. So talking to somebody else who is now can kind of hold you accountable, somebody who might make you feel guilty, that engages the third issue as well, the peer pressure element, where if I talk to my most responsible friend, I'm going to feel really pretty stupid if I haven't done this. And if I tell them to check on me in a day or two. So now you can increase the costs of delaying, and you can get someone who's kind of helping you out by putting a little pressure on you.
Yeah, sounds unfortunately like Tom's friend hasn't returned the call. Maybe he's miffed. I'm not sure. Is that what you think, Tom, that your friend is kind of upset with you?
Well, I'm concerned because I can't know if he doesn't call me.
Yeah.
But the one thing I do count on is he knew me when I was a teenager and in college, and he knew that I was a procrastinator. So I hope he remembers that.
Yeah, well... When are you going to get that memorabilia in the mail to him?
Perhaps tomorrow.
Yeah, I know how it is, Tom. Thanks for the call. We have another call before our news break. Peg in Sturgeon Bay. Hi, Peg.
Hello. Good morning. I didn't realize I was a procrastinator, but have you ever heard the saying that I work better under pressure?
I have.
I find that if I have things to do, I get them done. If I only have an hour or two before the company arrives, when I've had all day to really do it.
Yeah, there is a term for that, or there at least is some science behind that, Derek, that some of us do wait and then we can work better under pressure, or is that a myth?
No, actually, you know, we do, because again, pressure, a deadline, that definitely holds us accountable. And, you know, a good way, if that does get too stressful or too difficult, is again to try and set up earlier deadlines, you know, for yourself with either commitment devices, peer pressure, or something else. If you do need to just kind of get that pressure off you, you can set up earlier deadlines, with some kind of penalty. But the truth is, as the previous caller said, you know, he's increased his workload with a part-time job. Sometimes we need a little pressure. Sometimes we need to see it coming. So that can be a great way to make sure you get things done.
Yeah, so I guess Peg said it, she didn't realize she was a procrastinator because she's getting it done, but she's doing it, I think, on purpose because she thinks she works better under pressure. So maybe there's not a problem there if she's getting it done?
I mean, if she's getting it done, you know, as long as qualitatively. I mean, there is some research that shows we're actually less creative when we have a deadline like that because we don't have time to really explore ideas. But if she's not feeling any negative effects, if the stress actually, you know, helps her power through, then frankly, maybe that's the best strategy for her.
Thank you for the call, Peg. We will continue talking about how to get and stay motivated with Eric Barker, author of the blog Barking Up the Wrong Tree, where he wrote the article, How to Motivate Yourself, 3 Steps Backed by Science. How do you motivate yourself? We'll talk more after we check the latest news. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. It's a Monday morning. How motivated are you to get back to the grindstone? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 6:37 on this Monday, July 14th. We are talking about why it's so tough to get motivated and what we can do to get motivated. And we are welcoming your questions. We're welcoming your own suggestions. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. What helps to motivate you? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest wrote a piece on his blog, Barking Up the Wrong Tree, How to Motivate Yourself, 3 Steps Backed by Science. And we are talking about those steps. Get positive, get rewarded, and get peer pressure. Does that work for you? Our guest is Eric Barker, author of the blog, Barking Up the Wrong Tree. And what motivated you, Eric, to write this piece?
I've struggled with these same problems. I'm not immune, and it was really interesting to learn about, you know, a lot of the different techniques because it's like there's old wives' tales we hear, but and then there's things that, you know, idiosyncratically might work for us. But it's interesting to check the research, and you know, in doing that, I did confirm some of my own little pet theories. Like, for instance, there's a lot of research that shows that your mood in the morning sets your tone for kind of the whole day, and that dramatically affects productivity. So, you know, something I started to make sure I did was get up in the morning and kind of just, I woke up before the insanity started. We all know where the emails are coming in, the phones are ringing. I get up a little earlier, get a little time to, you know, kind of, you know, make sure I feel good, my head straight, and it's really helped me be more productive. It's, you know, yet another little tip.
You know, we have some Facebook comments from listeners who I think are doing this tongue-in-cheek, but one writes, coffee? ? I mean, are there any things, I like your morning routine, getting up before all the chaos starts, but to put yourself in the right mood in the morning?
I mean, you know, there's definitely a lot of research that shows that, you know, caffeine and glucose, in other words, you know, coffee and a donut, you know, does help fuel your brain, help your brain, work better. And, you know, that can be valuable. But I think what's even more valuable is Getting a routine that like makes you feel comfortable, you feel good, and if part of your routine is wake up before the craziness starts, have your cup of coffee, you read the newspaper, you do whatever you do, and that makes you kind of feel, you know, level-headed and ready, you know, if that works for you and that makes you feel settled, then, you know, that's a fantastic way to start the day.
Yeah. So what is the number one reason why we procrastinate?
What the research shows in terms of procrastination is that, frankly, a lot of it is about mood. You know, is that what we do is we try to get ourselves in a better mood. We don't feel good about what we're doing. So there's two sides to it in the sense that, number one, you know, your mood, which could be arbitrary, makes you not want to do something. And kind of in the hospital study that I mentioned, where it's like, if we've framed the task in our mind as unpleasant, I don't want to do that, then it becomes this bad thing, as opposed to, like I said, you know, parents change diapers, parents chase kids around, they do all kinds of tasks. But once we frame it in a role that we feel good about, that makes us feel better about ourselves, all of a sudden tasks become less aversive. You can do that, or, like I said, you increase the costs in terms of commitment devices, or has the caller increased his workload, until, frankly, procrastination just wasn't even an option anymore. There was no way to do it. He kind of forced himself, like the other caller who works really well with deadlines. By having that deadline, it forces her to get going. Anything that builds up what they call in the research activation energy, what does it take to cross that threshold and get you moving, can be really powerful.
Well, we had lots of caller response in our first half hour, and now our lines are open. So I want to motivate you to call in with your questions. I want you to call in with your examples. What do you do to motivate yourself? If you've got a to-do list that you don't necessarily want to do, what do you do to motivate yourself to accomplish that? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Does peer pressure work for you? Do rewards work for you? And what do you think about what our guest is saying, that the research says that our mood really has a lot to do with procrastination? And if we get positive, we are much less likely to procrastinate. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Here's a question that I'm not sure you have an answer to, Eric. I wonder if having a to-do list is, do you really have to, does that cause us to procrastinate? Because it just seems like, oh my gosh, I've just got so much to do. Maybe we should have shorter to-do lists so that we are doing the most important things.
That's actually a really good point. And the truth is, there actually is literature on the subject. Atul Gawande, who is a professor and a surgeon at Harvard Medical School, wrote a book called The Checklist Manifesto, and he talked about the power of lists and how lists can be very effective. They managed to turn around by making surgeons go through a list, wash your hands, do this, do that. They didn't gloss over things. They made fewer mistakes, and they actually saved lives. But to your point, one of the things he mentions in there is that you want to make sure your list's of a certain length. Once they get too long, once we're talking 2-3 pages, just like you said, again, we get an emotional factor kicking in. They start to feel overwhelming. They feel oppressive. And then what do we want to do? Well, I want to go do something else that's going to make me feel better. So by keeping your lists a reasonable list can be very powerful, very effective. But by keeping them a reasonable length, you're going to make sure that it feels achievable, it feels like something you can do, and that you will follow through on it.
Yeah. And while this article is on how to motivate ourselves, is there something that workplaces, organizations should take from this to help their employees be more motivated?
Oh, absolutely. One of the main things is kind of I've mentioned that story you tell yourself. And that's where company missions or the way leadership presents itself, the way the company sees its relationship with its employees, that story, you know, really matters. If it's kind of this wage slave perspective, it doesn't make people feel really good or feel really motivated. If it is more of something of we're a family, we're working together, what's the story the company tells? So what's going to make this person feel like, you know, what's the end goal? Is the end goal make lots of money for the company? Or is the end goal we're providing good service, we're helping people? That's one thing. Another thing is that research by Teresa Amabile at Harvard shows that one of the most motivating feelings that is out there, and this is a personal level or the organizational level, is the feeling of progress. So something that we can always do to kind of keep ourselves motivated, you know, in the middle so that we don't give up and so that organizations can keep people going on longer-term projects is making sure that we appreciate those small wins, those little things. Hey, I got past this first milestone. I did this first part of it really well. Taking a second to appreciate that feeling of progress, because we all know when we work hard at something, and it's just not going anywhere. It's not making a difference. Nothing is more demotivating than that. So kind of setting ourselves up in a way that we can feel progress, experience progress. Again, it's that sort of video game metaphor where, you know, games are made to beat one level, second level, and you feel like you're getting somewhere. And that's something we always want to take into consideration, organizations that are working employees or personally. How can we make sure that we're constantly giving ourselves little nibbles of progress so that we keep going?
We have callers. I motivated some people to call in. Judy in Whitefish Bay is with us. Hello, Judy.
Good morning to everyone. So much of what I am hearing goes with something that I found and has helped me for a very long time. I am a Civil War buff and read about a young Civil War widow who had a very long life ahead of her, stretching out, living with a very unpleasant relative. She had no place else to go. So she came up with a plan. Every day she was going to do specifically something for herself, something for somebody else, something she wanted to do, and then something she didn't want to do. So by checking these off, she got rid of those things that we procrastinate with, but always had a reason to keep going. And I thought these things may fit in, and if they were shared maybe the way people do so much technologically, it would go with the peer pressure. So what are your four things today, or did you accomplish one?
So I like that. I like that very much. So something you do for yourself, something you do for someone else, something do something you don't
that
want
you
to
really
do.
Really want to do, yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. And then something you don't.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like it sort of fits in, Eric.
I mean, I think that's an excellent point, because I think that's kind of a very human and very natural personal way to kind of tie in a lot of those abstract principles, where it's like, here's a story you're telling yourself, you know, here's something that engages you with other people. It's a list of sorts, you know, and it takes kind of a lot of different pieces, but it personalizes it. And frankly, when we have these cold, clinical, abstract systems, those don't always fit well. When we make it something that we believe in, that supports values, like helping other people, you know, all of a sudden, you know, it's ours. And when we feel a sense of ownership, you know, it's definitely a lot more motivating than somebody else telling us what to do. You know, one of the key principles Dan Pink talks about in his book about motivation is autonomy. We all want autonomy. So personal systems are really effective. I think that's a great point. Yeah.
Thank you, Judy. Carol in Waukesha is with us now. Hi, Carol.
Hi. The tip I want to offer is when I'm overwhelmed with paperwork, I'm self-employed, and I just don't know where to start, I establish a right-handed day or a left-handed day, and I can only pay attention to any paper piles to my right, and it sounds goofy, but it's really effective, and you sort of end up cheating because sometimes what's on the right hand relates to something you have to dig up on the left, but you make progress.
Yeah, it's not as overwhelming that way.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So a system that works for her, Eric.
What's really great about that system is there's another really powerful productivity tip called dashes. And what's great is just the toughest thing is getting started. I think that's kind of an old maxim. We know it to be true. And what gets you going, and one tip called dashes is basically you just set some arbitrary deadline. I'm going to work on this for 1 minute. If I work on it for 1 minute, I can go do whatever I want. And what you often find, 1 minute, 2 minutes, any small, tiny, is that once you get going, you're able to keep going. So whatever you can do to kind of trick yourself into get started, it's often a really effective means of motivating yourself to finish a project.
Yeah. So again, I was interested in the very end of your piece, and you ended kind of on the peer pressure aspect. You said email this to a couple of your friends and hold each other accountable.
I think there's, you know, again, that guilt factor. Previously on the blog, I've posted that there's research that shows nagging works. And when we feel that, when we don't feel any pressure, it's easy to forget. It's easy to give up on something. When we have somebody out there who knows we're supposed to do something, mm-hmm. you know, it can be kind of powerful. We want to keep up with that. And, you know, again, with something like this, I think we all look at so much stuff on the Internet. It's easy to let it slip by. If you do something that puts it out there, makes it hold accountable, maybe you get into a little competition with your friend, hey, that can really help you get stuff done.
Well, give us a last-minute motivational speech on how we can all get motivated and accomplish that to-do list today.
Like I said, I think dashes are a really good method. Just say, set some sort of BJ Fogg at Stanford is an expert on kind of building good habits and getting things done. And what he talks about is minimum viable effort. What's the smallest amount of time? Can you work on something for 1 minute? And frankly, you'll definitely find that you're getting something done, and that usually you can keep going. And as a last-ditch thing, what I would say to people is there's another concept out there that's been talked about called positive procrastination. And what's that mean? That means, well, hey, there's the big thing you're supposed to be doing, and if you can't get yourself to do that, then tell yourself you have to do the number two thing on your to-do list. So on the very least, you're getting something done. Maybe not the most important thing, but you're getting something done, and you're at least making forward progress on something on that to-do list.
And it does feel good to get something done. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Eric Barker is author of the blog Barking Up the Wrong Tree. He wrote the article How to Motivate Yourself, 3 Steps Backed by Science. Coming up, it's our Monday morning wake-up call here on the Ideas Network.